I'd like for you to join me in Exodus chapter 28 at verse number 6, where we are going to continue describing the uniform of the high priest of Israel. God has designated Aaron to be the first high priest for the nation of Israel. He is going to serve in the first tabernacle. His sons, there are four of them named, will serve as his priestly associates. And all of them need special clothing to demonstrate that they are serving in the role of intercessors. They are going to represent the people to God and God to the people. And so there is some symbolism of that service that make their appearance in the description of the clothing. Now, the full text, we're kind of going in accordance to the way it is described here, but having already read it many, many times, I want to use what we know as the fullness to make a something that's more helpful to us in the modern world to think about, because we think about layers starting closest to the skin. So they're going to have some shorts on that will serve as their underwear, linen. The next layer is going to be the robe that goes over the head, and it has fairly long sleeves, and the hem of the robe goes down pretty close to the ankles. That's going to be the basic piece of clothing that's normal for everybody. Now, the next item that goes on for the priests is an ephod. And an ephod is like a very simple smock that has a couple of armholes and a head hole, and then, of course, the bottom hole that goes down on top of the robe. Now, how far down this smock goes, I'm not altogether certain. But we know that this ephod becomes the attachment point for the badges of office, the markers of an intercessor, the markers of priesthood. And so that's what we will see described next is the ephod. Verse 6, they shall make the ephod of gold, of blue, and purple, and scarlet yarns, and of fine twisted linen skillfully worked. So it's going to be of the same sorts of materials that are in the fabric walls of the tabernacle itself. Verse 7, it shall have two shoulder pieces attached to its two edges. So it's going to have up on the top of the shoulder blade, or excuse me, the top of the shoulder, between the neck and the shoulder joint. It's going to have a specific fabric piece, could be like an epaulette, which is a little bit stiffened. And this is going to serve as the attachment point for some of these key markers of the office of priest. Verse 8, the skillfully woven band on it shall be made like it and be of one piece with it of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen. You shall take two onyx stones. So two semi-precious stones, crystalline, beautiful, and you will engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel. Six of their names on the one stone, and the names of the remaining six on the other stone, in the order of their birth. So, starting from Reuben downward, six of the sons, the eldest sons, their names will be perhaps on the right shoulder, on the right epaulette, because that's where the stone will be located. And then the remaining six, the youngest six, which would include Joseph and Benjamin, they'll be on the other shoulder, probably the left one. As a jeweler engraves signets, so you shall engrave the two stones with the names of the sons of Israel. So the stone will be engraved in such a way that either the names will be recessed or they will be raised. You shall enclose them in settings of gold filigree. Now, filigree is like a very fancy web of metal, and it's used to hold stones in place for jewelry. So these epaulets have some sort of setting of filigree that holds these stones in place, and the stones have the names of the sons of Israel, so that the high priest in his uniform will be carrying the names of Israel on his shoulders. That's very significant. Verse 12, you shall set the two stones on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as stones of remembrance for the sons of Israel. And Aaron shall bear their names before he who is on his two shoulders for remembrance. So exactly as I was describing here, the ephod has markers of responsibility for this office attached to it. So the epaulets have the stones of the 12 sons of Israel on them. Very beautiful in its design. Next item that gets attached to this ephod, verse 15. You shall make a breastplate piece of judgment in skilled work. Now the judgment will become obvious later. In the style of the ephod, you shall make it. Of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet yarns, and fine twisted linen shall you make it. So it's the same sort of fabric materials that have been donated that will be used for this, just like in the rest of the tabernacle. Now, here's the size. It shall be square and doubled, a span its length and a span its breadth. Now, a span, if you just hold your hand out and stretch your fingers apart as far as you can go, the span is from the tip of your thumb to the tip of your little finger. It is typically around 9 inches. It's about three times the distance from the bottom of your pinky finger to the bottom of your pointer finger across your palm. So 3 times 3 brings us to approximately 9. That's an approximation. So this thing is about 9 inches by 9 inches. Now it started out being 9 by 18, but it's been folded in half because it's formed a pocket. And we'll talk about that pocket later. Verse 17, you shall set in it 4 rows of stones, a row of sardius, topaz, and carbuncle shall be the first row, so that's 3. And the second row, an emerald, a sapphire, and a diamond, there's 6. Third row, a jacinth, and an agate, and an amethyst, that's 9. And the fourth row, a beryl, an onyx, and a jasper. That's 12. Because these 12 stones are going to represent, once again, the 12 tribes of Israel. They shall be set in gold filigree. So here are precious and semi-precious stones. And the stones here are awfully hard sometimes to pin them exactly down. When you do a check into the original language, you get debates as to what some of the words actually mean. And I know some of you are just like me. You want to know, hey, how does this match with the jewelry mentioned or the stones mentioned in association with the New Jerusalem and the 12 tribes being associated with the naming there. And my answer is they don't match. And so you can't find a perfect parallel. Only thing for our purposes to remember is this is very pretty. This is very beautiful. And it has a representation of how God feels about his people. They are to be beautiful in his sight. Verse 21, there shall be 12 stones with their names according to the names of the sons of Israel. They shall be like signets, each engraved with its name for the 12 tribes. So the tribal names are engraved on these stones. Now, this is a possibility that the names on the epaulet stones are slightly different than the names on this breastpiece stone. And here's the reason why. I think it is possible that Levi's name is not one of the breastpiece stones. That instead, the 12 tribes will include the two Joseph tribes by name, Manasseh and Ephraim, on these stones. So that the tribe of Levi is actually the tribe that is serving God and representing the other 12 tribes to God. That's a possibility just to chew on. Now, how is this attached to the ephod, the little smock that goes over the robe? Verse 22, you shall make for the breastpiece twisted chains like cords of pure gold. So they're going to get gold turned into little bitty strings, and then it's twisted together to make a braided chain. And then you shall make for the breastpiece two rings of gold. Put the two rings on the two edges of the breastpiece. Now that's the top corners. We'll talk about the bottom corners later. You shall put the two cords of gold in the two rings at the edges of the breastpiece. The two ends of the two cords you shall attach to the two settings of filigree, and so attach it in front to the shoulder pieces of the ephod. So there is basically a little golden braided chain on each side of the top of this breastpiece that go up and attach to the epaulet stones. So there's a little golden chain attachment. Now that's enough to hold it around the neck, shall we say, but it's going to flop unless we have an anchor down at the bottom of the breastpiece. So verse number 26, you shall make two rings of gold and put them at the two ends of the breastpiece on its inside edge near the ephod, so down at the bottom. And you shall make two rings of gold and attach them in front to the lower part of the two shoulder pieces of the ephod as at its seam above the skillfully woven band of the ephod. And they shall bind the breastpiece with its rings to the rings of the ephod with a lace of blue so that it may lie on the skillfully woven band of the ephod so that the breastpiece shall not come loose from the ephod. So basically, there's some sort of strap. This is probably the sash that we're talking about here that goes around the lower chest, and it holds it in place there. So the breastpiece is not going to flap around loose. It's going to be tight up against the upper chest. Speaking of which, now we come to its purpose. Verse 29. So Aaron shall bear the names of the sons of Israel in the breastpiece of judgment on his heart when he goes into the holy place to bring them to regular remembrance before the Lord, before he who is. So just like he's carrying the 12 sons of Israel names on his shoulders, he is now carrying over his heart, which for the Israeli people was the place where you made your choices, where you made your decisions. So the 12 tribes of Israel names are on Aaron's chest, on his heart, when he goes before the Lord. So the purpose of the ephod is to represent the responsibility of the priest, the high priest in particular, to represent the people of Israel, the tribes of Israel, to God, and God to them. He's the connection. He is the intercessor. Verse 30. In the breastpiece of judgment, so in that pocket I talked about earlier, which is access from the top, you shall put the Urim, which has the idea of, I think it's lights. It's the plural of light. You shall put the Urim and the Thummim, which is the plural for judgment. So it's lights and judgment, or lights and decisions. And they shall go, they shall be on Aaron's heart when he goes in before he who is. Thus Aaron shall bear the judgment of the people of Israel on his heart before he who is regularly. Now we don't find out until much later in the story what the Urim and the Thummim do. They are effectively a mechanism by which God can be inquired of with a yes or no, or a this or that decision. And some people have thought that they were just two simple stones, one black, one white, and that the high priest, Aaron, would ask a question of God, reach into his little pocket, and pull out a stone, and if it were white, the answer was yes. If it was black, the answer was no. I don't think that's how it worked. And the reason I don't think that's how it worked is because we know that in the time of King Saul, God would not answer King Saul through the Urim and the Thummim. Now, the only way that's possible is if there's something else that has to be going on other than just the simple choice between a yes or a no or a black and a white stone. In Jewish tradition, which is represented in Josephus's writings from the first century of the Christian era, the tradition passed down was that there were two stones in this pocket, but the stones would glow, one or the other, to indicate the answer from God. Don't know what the stones were colored with, don't know what precious or semi-precious gem they might have been, but it seems to be that the high priest understood one stone represented yes, the other stone represented no, and whichever stone glowed supernaturally, that was the answer. And so that would make sense with the Saul story if the stones, neither of them, would glow for Saul. And so this is the lights, and that makes sense too, that they would be referred to as lights and judgments, because it's two stones, one of them lights up, and from this, judgments are determined. And so this Urim and Thummim become a very important part of the high priest's divination, is what we're going to use here, of God's will in a two-sided decision. On with verse 31. you shall make the robe of the ephod all of blue. Now, this is the normal clothing for a person, a robe. This is the clothing that goes over the regular clothing. I'm sorry, I kind of confused myself with my wording here. So it's going to be all blue. It shall have an opening for the head and in the middle of it with a woven binding around the opening like the opening of a garment. So the top has a special woven collar surround so that it may not tear. Now, on its hem, you shall make pomegranates of blue and purple and scarlet yarns around its hem with bells of gold between them. A golden bell, then a pomegranate, a golden bell, then a pomegranate around the hem of the robe. Now, I do not remember, and I was going to check and neglected, to see whether or not there's any place in Scripture that gives the number of bells and pomegranates here. I'm sure that there are Jewish traditions regarding that, but I will try to give myself an assignment to see if I can find that again. But basically, around the bottom of this blue, beautiful robe were this alternating beautiful pom-poms. They're called pomegranates because they've kind of got that sort of rounded shape. And bells made of gold to make noise. And it's musical noise. And verse 35, it shall be on Aaron when he ministers, and its sound will be heard when he goes into the holy place before he who is, and when he comes out, so that he does not die. Now, this is where tradition kind of collides with just the wording that's given here. When Aaron goes into the tabernacle building, he must go only on official business. He doesn't just show up there. If he just shows up there with no business, then he's basically trespassing upon God's place, and that is a good way to get yourself executed when you trespass on the king's private property. The bells here seem to be symbolic of Aaron being about work, and you can hear him there going about his work. Even when he's out of sight inside the tabernacle building, you can hear him moving around in there. You know he's doing God's business, and that's a beautiful thing. And it kind of reminds me of the chimes many of us have around our houses. Why do we have them? Because we love the sound that's made when the wind moves those chime tong around, and it's pretty, and it's special, and it's soothing. I think that was the original intention here, is that this was supposed to be a soothing, happy sound, that the high priest, our intercessor, is going about his business, taking care of what we need God to know about us and what God needs us to know about him. Now, later, though, in Jewish tradition, and this is not in Scripture, this is in the Jewish traditional writings and in the rabbinical teachings, they were like thinking about God as on the verge of striking down people for the slightest infringement. And so they would tie a rope around the high priest's ankle whenever he went into the temple, because this is much later in time. And if the music of the bells ever stopped tinkling, then they would assume that he had died in there. And they would use the rope to pull him out so that nobody would have to go in and violate God's presence. Now, I can appreciate that mindset of fear of the Lord taken to the extreme, but I think it misses the original intention here, as I've already expressed. I don't think these bells were intended to be, oh no, we can't hear him anymore. He must be dead because he violated God's presence. I think these bells were, isn't it wonderful to hear our high priest working on our behalf? Because you know, ultimately, the high priest symbolism is about Jesus. And isn't it a beautiful thing every moment of every day to know that Jesus is in the presence of God, working on our behalf, acting as our intercessor? And it's almost musical to think about him there in the presence of God the Father with all the angelic hosts around him. And so I like to think of it in the positive, not in the negative. Let's finish today with one more part of the uniform. Verse 36, you shall make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it like the engraving of a signet. So it's either recessed or it's raised. And I think it's probably raised. Koresh le Yahweh, holy to he who is. That's what's written on it. You shall fasten it on the turban, which is the hat. I always like to think of the turban as being kind of like a baker's hat that they would wear. And so this plate will be on the front side of the turban. It shall be on Aaron's forehead. So this is called, you know, the seal of God on the forehead of Aaron. And Aaron shall bear any guilt from the holy things that the people of Israel consecrate as their holy gifts. It shall regularly be on his forehead that they may be accepted before he who is. So Aaron and every high priest after him is marked on their forehead with the name of God, because that's who they work for. And we know that Jesus is marked as holy to he who is, and he is our high priest, bearing our sins into the very presence of God and getting our atonement. Come back next time, and we'll continue in the Word.